The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
We got a real simple plan. One man, one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven.
This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel is Reese Davis.
The latest college football playoff rankings are out. Not a lot of drama and a little bit of backtracking after the initial interview. This is College Game Day podcast for Wednesday, November 30th. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel here. So, Pete, no real surprise. I have Michigan ranked ahead of Georgia. That's mainly a nod to them having the best win of the season and it being this week. Honesty compels me to say I think Georgia's probably the better team, so I've got zero problem with them being number one. TCU 3, SC up to 4, and the stack up behind was Ohio State, Alabama, Tennessee, the presumed three contenders. Should SC falter, and some believe should TCU falter? I asked Boo Corrigan whether they were locked into those positions, given that the body of work was complete. You know, Boo said, you're asking me to project. I said, no, not really, because they're finished playing. And he said correct, but then in the aftermath has clarified that it'll be reevaluated. They're not necessarily locked into those positions. I contend that even though he said the right thing in the aftermath by correcting and backtracking, that de facto, the real truth is they are locked in those positions and Ohio State will be the team if there is a spot open. Would you concur with that?
Again, you actually made a reference to this on the show tonight. I was proud of it, that some of us root for chaos. And the chaos of Alabama leaping over Ohio State and not obviously playing would really create like the college football. Like Twitter actually may go away. Elon's tried his hardest by laying off 90% of it. But no, it would actually melt down like a nuclear meltdown. Yes, the state of Ohio, which was a sad, sad place late Saturday night, would really not have good times with that. I, Reese, am going to stay. I'm going to stay optimistic. You've rubbed off on me this whole season. You've sucked the Northeast pessimistic, sarcastic, dark soul out of me. I believe in chaos. I believe that enough can happen this weekend that a TCU loss makes it a really riveting debate between them and Ohio State. Now you can say, one of their, you know, you could stack their best wins, etc. But like, you objectively have to think who's the better team. If TCU played Ohio State tomorrow in Fargo, who's favored by how much?
Well, probably Ohio State's favored by a touchdown because I think TCU is only favored by 2.5. But if you use that logic, Pete, then Alabama has to be in. Because Alabama's favored against every one of those teams, I would argue, with the exception of possibly Georgia, right? Well, maybe
would,
not.
Would Alabama ranking. Be favored against Ohio State? It would be a half point, or you know, it would be less than a field goal either way.
Yeah, you know what? I had someone reach out to me about that very thing, and I'm going to dig up the email right now. Danny Sheridan.
I think this person might have reached. Oh, Danny Sheridan did. I had to reach out. Right, it's lobbying season. Kevin Warren was lobbying in the press box in Columbus. Yeah. We're starting to hear the little whispers of what if. That's good.
Okay, here it is. Here's what Sheridan has, and he also said he bounced it off some people around. You know, Danny's an odds maker. You can take it for what it's worth. Alabama -3 against Ohio State. Alabama -6 against USC. Alabama -7 against TCU. Now, mind you, I'm not advocating or lobbying that the Crimson Tide should be in. I don't think they should be, because while, you know, Van Pelt and I talked about this a little bit too, if they got in, could they win the national championship? Well, of course they could. Sure. But over the course of the season, you need to win the right games. You need to, if you're going to have a suspect record as they do relative to being in the top four, you can't have as many other close calls as they did. I don't think they've done enough to get in. Now, I will also say this. I don't think there are any good options if USC loses, because Ohio State has a couple of good wins, a couple of really good wins, but that flop at the end, you're going in off of that. That's not a good option. Tennessee blasted by South Carolina and now without their starting quarterback. That's not a good option. And I've just outlined the reason why Alabama's not a great option. So that, but I'm going to tell you this, if SC loses, they're not a good option either. So, you know, I say the lesser of some bad choices, if there's an option, is Ohio State. Now, when I say bad choices, I don't mean bad teams. Those are all good teams. Sure. But I mean relative to picking four teams that are unequivocally the best, that are on top, I don't think there's a great option at number four unless we have the status quo.
Yeah, and I think Ohio State going to four if USC loses is, I don't say a no-brainer, but got to remember, in the history of the playoff, there have been 0-2-loss teams. And I don't think this 2-loss USC team, which really doesn't have like a stand-on-the-table signature win, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have a top 10 win, do they?
They do not. What their best win would be, let's see, they lost to Utah, obviously. They beat UCLA. They beat Notre Dame. It's not a top 10 win. Actually, Oregon State is a good solid win for them.
Good win. You know, yep. Road win.
They have several good solid wins. Really, the only teams that have those stand on the table great wins are Michigan, obviously.
Sure.
Which is the best in my judgment.
Boy, they stood on that table, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And I would say Georgia with the Tennessee game. And I give the nod to Michigan's win because it was on the road. Georgia's was at home. But with Tennessee being that hot, you know, Hooker, full strength, all of that, that was probably the second best win of the season, I think. You know, at least among contenders. You know, among contenders, I mean.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that at all. You know, as we talked about on the early week pod, Columbus was a fatalistic place on Saturday night. It was a dark, dark place. I went out after doing some work pretty late to get a bite to eat, and I was just sort of catching the overheard, you know, Monday morning quarterback, Saturday night quarterback of Buckeye Nation, and it was amusing. And you know, CJ Stroud needs to run the ball, which I kind of agree with, by the way. You know, but it was just like it's always interesting to hear the frustrations of the rich, because it's like the, you know, it's like when the uber wealthy go on vacation and complain that their Mai Tai doesn't come fast enough at the Ritz-Carlton, right? Like that's like, those are the Ohio State. But when those complaints are happening, they're real and they're loud. And they were certainly echoing through the night on Saturday in Columbus. But I think if you take a breath, and I saw Boo talk tonight to you about the entire season's body of work and not being a prisoner of the moment and not overreacting too much. I want to say that was a 7-8 point game with, you know, in the second half of the fourth quarter. Now it went off the rails spectacularly. But it's interesting when you take a breath and look back. Like it would not surprise me at all if on Selection Sunday, you know, with chaos, the inherent beauty and backbone of our sport, if the old Buckeyes got in, and I would think we would very quickly shift to, they want to bounce back, and that Georgia game is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, they're much like Alabama, and if Hooker were healthy with Tennessee, I think the same would be true for them. If Ohio State gets in, they can win the national championship. Oh, I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. You know, unless their psyche has been damaged, say the way, and I know there was some injury issues with Jason White, as I recall, in 2003. But, you know, Oklahoma had built such a big lead in 2003 in the BCS that they didn't have to win the Big 12 championship game. And Kansas State smashed them 35-7. And, you know, they played fairly close against LSU in the championship game, but they had been rattled. It's sort of been shaken to the core. At least it seemed that way. And as I said, I know they had some injury issues. But, you know, unless something like that has happened to Ohio State, I think your line of thinking is more in line with what the reality would be. Is it Ohio State wants to prove itself? Game got away from them. The way they played in the first half is much more indicative of the type of team they are. And they would probably sure hope that Michigan won its semifinal game, because I would assume Michigan stays in the 2-3 slot and Ohio State would play Georgia. That they hope they win and they get a shot at Michigan in the national championship game. So sort of the Big Ten version of Bama, Georgia and revenge last year, you know, it'd be very similar.
Yes. Yes. And you're talking to some people around the Big Ten today. That was people pretty quickly forgot the tenor in which Georgia lost that game, in which Jameson Williams is still running free on fly routes in my memory from the Georgia Dome that afternoon. So I think there's a little drama left in this here season. It has been a remarkably fun year, and TCU, where we're going on Saturday, has probably been, you've called it the story of the season, and I agree with that. It has been the most fun, from the Hypno Toad to, like, it's just had a little bit of everything. Sonny Dykes re-energized in the perfect place for Sonny Dykes, right, in Fort Worth, and a talented program, and re-energized with a little bit of new leadership. And so, yeah, it's been really neat to see that. And I'll be really curious, the shades of purple coming this weekend, right? The purple rain that we're going to see in Jerry World with TCU and with K-State. Those two fan bases really coming out. Because let's face it, Kansas State has had one heck of a season. Chris Klieman deserves a ton of credit. And, you know, not surprisingly, you know, we've picked all the TCU games this year. They're not heavy favorites. I think that number is what it's,
I think it's 2.5.
Two and a half. Yeah, it's 2.5.
I think last time I saw it was 2.5.
Yeah, it's 2.5. And this is the first time that I think TCU could really be tight, right? K-State's going to go in there with nothing to lose and hoping to crush their dreams. And they've showed the capability of blowing teams out. And TCU now is right there on the cusp. And human nature is a huge part of what happens in the performance of 18 to 22 year olds. And so far, TCU, everyone's been waiting for him to let down. You have faded in your usage of the Sonny Dykes fade, Reese.
I have. He's overcome it, because now even if they lose, it's not a fade. And this is a really good team they're playing, a team that can beat them, a team that had them down by 18 points in Fort Worth. So I don't think it's any grand failure on TCU's part if they don't win the game Saturday afternoon. But, you know, they're a veteran bunch. You know, I think I ran across something today in doing some prep. I think they're one of just a handful of Power Five teams who've started the same offensive line in every game. Everybody's talked about them going to back of quarterback. The last drive against Baylor, they didn't have Quentin Johnston. They didn't have Kendre Miller, but what they did have, they had that offensive line. There were seven Power Five programs who've had the same offensive line every game.
They've all had good seasons.
Yeah, and they have 172 career starts among them. And I bring that up because I think a lot of times when you get tight, you do have the skill players getting tight, but sometimes you start letting in pressures, and Kansas State certainly has guys that can pressure. You start giving up pressure, start blowing blocks. Maybe if you've got veteran guys, you've been around the block, so to speak, but we'll see.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
If you had to pick one If you had to pick one of the top three to lose their championship game, would it be, I'll say one of the top four. Okay. Would it be Georgia? Would it be Michigan losing to the spoiler makers who have built an entire reputation on doing this? They've done this more than anybody historically, beating highly ranked teams, you know, when unranked. Would it be TCU or will it be Utah beating USC again?
The spoiler makers, Bear is going to love the spoiler makers this week because I got a feeling there's going to be a few Wolverines resting, and we'll follow that up on College Game Day on Saturday morning. But like, you don't play Blake Corum in this game, right?
No.
I mean, after he had two snaps and tapped out, right? Like that doesn't make sense. You don't trot Mike Morris out there for 5-6 snaps on that gimpy ankle. I just think, you know, again, human nature let down. That said, I can't take Purdue. Like, I just don't think their defensive front is. Michigan is designed to just systemically, slowly pick apart and eviscerate somebody like that. And look, there were times when Michigan felt like in the first half of that game, Reese, they were on the ropes in the horseshoe. There were times where, and so can Aiden O'Connell come out and spin that magic bean around and make it interesting for a minute? But I just think that offensive line is just going to eventually annihilate Purdue for that. So I would, I'm going to pick Kansas State. Like, I don't know many teams that are playing better right now in the country than Kansas State. So if I had to pick a most likely team to win, I would take Kansas State against TCU. I think Will Howard could be one of the faces of the sport next year out of the Big 12. And I'm really excited to see them let it, you know, to see them really let it rip.
Will Howard, since he's taken over, they've increased their scoring over their last five games. They're averaging 40 points per game. You know, at one point they were going to redshirt him. And when he came into the TCU game, they actually extended the lead because Adrian Martinez was still playing then. Then Will got hurt. They got a little sideways when Jake Rubley came in. Will came back, wasn't himself. But, man, he's been sensational. And I think that's a good call that next year he definitely could be one of the faces of the sport. He could be a story of the day on Championship Saturday.
No doubt.
For sure. Best in Game is brought to you by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
Upset? I'm not letting you off the – I'm not letting you, off easy.
It would have to be Kansas State, but by Superdog rules, that would be too close a spread.
Oh, okay.
So if I were going to pick one, really the only choice with a bigger spread would be LSU or Purdue. I would take Purdue because of resting some Wolverines, because of the emotional nature of last week, and because of just the weird voodoo hex that Purdue can throw at you for some reason. I mean, they've won 9 games when unranked against top 2 opponents. You say, well, so what? Big deal. Do you know no other team has more than 4 wins like that? They've done it 9 times.
Mind-bending. And I mean, that's, yeah.
There's no logical reason at all to think that Purdue can pull that upset. None. Zero. Except that they always seem to find a way. There wasn't much reason to think they'd roll double nickels on Ohio State back in 17. Tyler Trent year wasn't 55 or whatever it was, but the year that, you know, the Tyler Trent game, the famous game, there's 49 points they put up. There was no reason to think that night either, and they did it.
No. Who's the little Rondale Moore? He's still running away from the Buckeye defense.
Yeah, just ripped right through them. So, you know, certainly, I tell you, Michigan answered the bell. I'll give them this, though. Last year, you could have said the same thing against Iowa. In the Big Ten championship game Iowa's got a good defense. Maybe they've got a chance. Michigan's going to be celebrating. Man, they went in and they took care of business. Yeah. And if Michigan comes in like that, the game won't be close.
Yeah, they mauled Iowa. What was that game, like 50-3?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, it was not Kirk Ferentz's finest performance. Speaking of Iowa and Michigan, there's a lot of buzz that Cade McNamara will transfer to Iowa from Michigan.
Let me ask you about that. And I want to talk about some of these things, some of these other news things that are going on. I mean, look, I really like Kirk Ferentz personally, and I know they've had
wonderful success. Guy.
Yeah, he's a terrific guy, and he's a great coach. He's done a great job. I know we've had some fun with their offense and all of that over the course of the year, and they've earned that. That's okay. It's fair game. But why? I mean, why would a quarterback choose a program like that? That I mean, I understand what McNamara's skill set is, but why would they choose a program that's had, you know, such difficulty in putting quarterbacks in great positions? At least in the last few years. I know you go back a few years, they had, you know, Nate Stanley and some other guys that, you know, they've done a better job with, but why?
Who's the kid? He was like Beathard. The son of a.
You're thinking of Beathard?
Yeah, I'm thinking of Beth. CJ Beathard. Yeah, CJ Beathard. Remember that? I think it was Iowa Michigan State Big Ten title game that was won on like a 22 play drive. You know, that kind of broke Iowa's hearts there. I mean, I heard the McNamara thing. I was like, oh, like, to me, what Jim Harbaugh has done at Michigan, and this is a compliment, he's built them into a better version of Wisconsin and Iowa. Now, look, the Ohio State game, if that's your only point of reference, you'd think, no, they're a dynamic play juggernaut. But that was like an anomaly, what happened, the way they scored those five chunk touchdowns. It's just, that is just not the way they played. And it was... there were just giant lapses in both coverage and tackling. And then God only knows what happened on those two runs at the end for Ohio State. But they are a team built on game management and good decisions. Now, credit J.J. McCarthy. He played all world on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had the game of his life, and he's a very good quarterback. The big scouting breakdown I did, Reese, so I had a coach be like, man, he's a first round pick, like down the line. Like people are sleeping on his talent every time about Stroud. And so it was that was certainly, I thought, an interesting a little bit of an interesting, just I hadn't heard that. I hadn't thought that. I thought he was a better version of McNamara, but not maybe have the dynamic arm talent you have to be considered in that class. Now, he certainly was opportunistic with his feet. I mean, that's always been a great skill. So yeah, the McNamara thing, pretty interesting. I thought pretty interesting.
You know, I don't know why I haven't heard any rumors except for I knew he was going into the portal. You know where I thought he would go?
Where?
Notre Dame.
His last name's McNamara, Reese?
No, because it seemed to fit. Maybe I'm just thinking, Jack Cohn, took that route for the Irish from Wisconsin to Notre Dame. And I thought, you know what? Cade McNamara would be a good fit for the way Tommy Reese runs things at Notre Dame. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Notre Dame is definitely going to be in the portal market, and they're going to be in it hard. We broke the story today that Hudson Card is going in the portal. There will be intense Irish interest on all the top portal guys. We already have Hank Bachmeyer. I'm a Hank Bachmeyer fan. He won a lot of games at Boise and is a really solid quarterback. There's a lot of good quarterbacks who played a lot of good college football, a lot of talented guys. And it's been fun to see the Hendon Hookers of the world where, you know what, quarterback's hard, man. There's so many variables that go into it. It has to be the right system, the right coach. You can't have, look at Phil Dracovic this year. His offensive line just got him annihilated, and you can take steps back. That's at Boston College. So I'm all for the second chances. I mean, can you imagine Matt Castle doing what he did? Remember Matt Castle didn't.
He sat behind Leinart the whole time, basically.
Yeah, I don't believe he started a game there. And now he's on like local TV in Boston breaking down Patriots games. He was a late round pick and ended up being a darn good NFL player. But that's like, even Cardale Jones, which was less than 10 years ago, the notion of Cardale sitting and waiting his turn all those years, he would have gone to Akron or Northern Illinois and slung the rock, 50 times. December 5th is the official portal date. I can't even imagine what it's going to look like on that day. That's just going to be sheer and utter chaos. Like talking to coaches this week, and they're like, we're re-recruiting our guys right now. Like, you know, they're having individual meetings, making sure guys don't want to go in the portal. Like, and if they are going to go, you know, that's fine and normal, but they need to figure out ways around them. And then coaches have to decide, can we go get someone better than him in the portal?
Yeah.
So it's those personnel departments that have really built up over the last decade are being tried and tested right now. I did hear a bunch of stories today about, School X kind of lobbed some calls to the high school coach just to check in.
You know? Just in case. Is happy? Are you sure? But, you know, if he ever thinks he's not happy, you know, we could really use somebody like him. We really liked him coming out of high school.
You wonder if they start, hey, you got any juniors I should look at, or they just dive right into it?
Yeah, probably. At this point, there's no time to waste. You dive right in. You know, of all the guys going, and there'll be many more going into the portal, I'm really interested in Hudson Card. I mean, I know you mentioned him about that. Is there any likely landing spot for him that you can think of top of your head without divulging a story that you're probably going to break at some point in the not too distant future?
I would think Hudson Card can go just about anywhere he wants. He's a 6'1", 6'2" pedigree from Lake Travis High School in Austin, top 40 recruit coming out of high school, started 5 games, slung the magic of being against Alabama after Quinn Ewers got hurt this year. What scares coaches is the guys who haven't played. And Hudson Card has played enough. I think he's 3-2 as a starter. There's high-end arm talent there. And from talking to some sources today for the story that I did, he just wants to go somewhere he can develop. The people around him really think that the tools are there to be an NFL quarterback. And the joke in the NIL kind of quarterback world is the first decision you make is an emotional decision, and then you have to make a business decision. And Hudson Card is going to make a business decision, and he's going to have good business options.
Business decisions made in coaching as well, too. What did you, once it finally came and settled in and Twitter's having a field day with it, we're going to visit with him on Saturday, I believe, on College Game Day. What did you make of the way Hugh Freeze handled the introduction, the move to Auburn so far?
It was all very Hugh Freeze, right? You're like, oh, I remember Hugh. I remember, he's got a little televangelist in him, like there's a certain self-assurance and a certain charm, that comes with Hugh, but there's certainly baggage, that comes with him as well. And so, yeah, I thought it was about what you'd expect it to be. Right. It's sort of a comeback story. I don't know how many people were rooting for the comeback story. You know what I mean? Usually, like, it's
it's got a lot to overcome, a lot of
self-inflicted wounds.
Sure.
I mean, here's the thing on Freeze, like, that if we're just gonna, like, 3-2-1, here's the thing on Freeze, if we're just gonna go to the brass knuckles of it all, like, he not only called a hooker from his school phone, he was dumb enough to call a hooker from his school phone. So there was some you could more, I'm not a pearl clutcher. I think our listeners would know that, but there's just a baseline brazenness there. That just, was that. And then obviously the NCAA violations, there was parents quoted basically saying that they were misled. So there was plenty of malfeasance and look, Auburn kind of acknowledged all that and said, we want to go beat Alabama. And this guy beat Alabama twice. And you know what? It's a billion-dollar entertainment business. And Hugh Freeze is another storyline. And he's earned it on the field. And, he's fought his way back and give Liberty credit, right? That was a pretty good marriage of mutual desperation, right? Liberty wanted to become a factor in big-time college football. And they did by hiring Hugh Freeze. And Hugh Freeze needed a chance. And Liberty gave him the chance. And so that marriage worked out tremendously.
The inclination among people is to sit in a place of unearned moral authority. And the personal failings, and they were that, of Hugh Freeze and his malfeasance and extramarital activities, that's between him and his wife and he and his daughters. And his family and his faith, and you know, to sit here and to hear a lot of people say, well, you know, I don't believe him. You know, he's this or that. I don't think he means it. That's we don't get to do that. We haven't earned that moral authority place. The question becomes, whenever you're in the public eye, and this goes for you and me too, if we have a failing of some type that becomes public, it is going to follow us, period. That's the way it is. And he had a very public one, a very embarrassing one, and one that, you know, sort of like a fastball running in on you. You're just going to have to wear it for the rest of your career. You're going to have to wear that and hope that from a personal standpoint, you've moved past it. From an opposing fan social media standpoint, that's never going away. So, you know, that will always be something that he has to deal with. So if Auburn's comfortable with it and, you know, they feel as if, you know, that's not going to, you know, I'm not really even sure what the NCAA rules are anymore. But if, you know, if he's not going to get them into, if there are rules, if he's not going to get them in trouble with the rules, and they feel comfortable with how he's going to represent them, well, you know what? I mean, he who is without sin, right? Cast the first stone. So here he comes. He's a very good football coach. And, you know, and I think, ironically, if I saw the schedule correctly, he'll get a chance for other redemption against New Mexico State on Auburn. Now, I think they play Auburn next year. After, I mean, that was the one where you're like, oh, the whole team knows coach is leaving, we're out. You know, so that was, yeah, but it's an interesting thing because it is going to be constant fodder forever. And the other funny thing that I saw was, and the oddity, the last three Auburn coaches now have had really short tenures at Arkansas State. So some wise guy on Twitter said, if this one doesn't work out, they should try Butch Jones next, which is something I wish I'd thought of to say first, but I'll give credit to whoever it was that posted it on Twitter.
I saw someone, and I think
it was an Arkansas media member, post that Auburn has paid former Arkansas State coaches like $129 million.
My buddy Red Wolves AD Jeff Purinton says he wishes he could have that money to invigorate the program. I'm sure just a little slice of it, right?
They do have great facilities if you've ever been to Jonesboro. They have like elite G5 facilities.
You know what? Jim Wojciechowski was telling me about that. I haven't, I've never been there. But he went for the Saban Reclamation Project story. He talked to Butch for a while, and he was raving about the facilities that they have there.
I was there a couple of years ago. Charlie Strong grew up near there, and I did a big profile on him for Sports Illustrated, and I went to Batesville, Arkansas. And I recall, and this is a while ago, it's probably changed, but I recall Jonesboro being a dry town. I'm always skeptical of dry towns. Just fun options. That's all.
Do you think any of our listeners don't know what dry towns are? Because I grew up in dry towns and dry counties.
Yeah, you should. Oh. Yeah. Like, so it means you can't buy alcohol, or there's like rules of where you can buy alcohol or when. And I can't sit there and tell you you can or can't have a drink at a restaurant there. But I was told that there was a dry county or town. I don't remember which one, but it was a constant theme when I was there. So try recruiting there, huh?
Yeah.
I don't think it is anymore, though. I want to be clear about that.
Yeah, there was no in the Davis household growing up, there was no alcohol, period. Huh. Ever. But I do know that people who did choose to indulge for a long period of time, they had to go to the bootleggers. So there would be people, you know, who would sneak across the state line to Mississippi or Tennessee or someplace and sneak it back. Or maybe in some cases, maybe they made some, and then people would go and there would be commerce under the table.
Did you grow up on a pirate ship in 1842?
I did not. I did not. I grew up in Northwest Alabama, where it was dry for quite some period of time.
Is it still?
It is not where I consider the place where I grew up most of the time, Muscle Shoals. It was not.
That's right. You're from Muscle Shoals.
We've got the Swampers. We've been known to pick a song or two.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, that's for sure.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
So what else is happening in terms of coaching searches? I mean, nothing's more entertaining than this time of year.
Brent Key got promoted today.
I heard from Jay Batt. I saw that. You wanted to make sure that we were aware of it, which I knew we were. I think he made a good choice there.
Yeah. So, you know, credit Brent Key. I would not have given him much of a chance when he took over. Just because of the state of the roster. And I believe they went 4-4 under him, and they had some big wins. Carolina obviously was probably the biggest of all those wins. And honestly, if you'd asked me last week, I probably wouldn't have given Brent Key much of a chance. But the way the search unfolded, and Jay Batt, the rookie athletic director there in his first big hire, did a national search, talked to 10, 12 people. And it was reported actually in Atlanta that Willie Fritz was going to take the job. Somebody reported there was a team meeting, and Willie had gone and spoken to Georgia Tech, but no deal was consummated. And we reported Tuesday afternoon that, and it's an interesting prism into collegiate administration, mm-hmm. that a couple of the higher profile candidates that they were courting, including Fritz, were a little turned off because they wouldn't guarantee a ton of money. Now, if you're an administrator taking over at Georgia Tech, not Jay Batt, but above his level, mm-hmm. and you see you get served an $11.3 million bill to pay Jeff Collins to go away, mm-hmm. there's some obviously understandable institutional hesitancy to guarantee a whole bunch of contracts. So, mm-hmm. The salaries were probably on the lower side. It's Georgia Tech. They don't have a huge budget. But if the numbers aren't guaranteed, there were a handful of coaches who said, you know what, I'm a little more comfortable staying where I am now. And mm-hmm. so as they kind of looked out over the landscape, they said, you know what, we have a guy here who did a really good job, who stayed solid. And they went this afternoon, met with him around 2:00, and promoted him to be the head coach.
And he's a Georgia Tech guy too, Pete. Oh, yeah. And sometimes
captain.
Yeah, that's not always the best thing. There are a lot of times when I feel badly when it goes sideways at your alma mater, because nothing's ever really the same, mm-hmm. But there's also a great power to it, because there's not, if you go there, it might more likely, if it goes well, might be a long-term place. Now, I don't think that hardly anyone is a 15, 20 year solution anymore. But if you can get 8 to 10, out of somebody without them looking to jump after 3, that's a good job. And if things weren't going well, you have a guy who kept a program together and got some big wins when really they didn't have much of a right to this year. He did a really good job and, built some trust with the players. So why not? I mean, I think it's, we also got a touchdown out of the former winged Beaver, Tyson Pumachon, the former Clemson Tiger, but former AOF quarterback, Avon O'Farrell.
Chip Long was running 2 quarterbacks in and out for a while. He was using Tyson in the red zone. I think we were actually watching this on the way back from Bozeman that night. This is what I'll say about Brent Key. And one of the reasons why he got the job and why there's some promise to this hire, I believe Tech had 3 punts blocked the first 3 weeks of the season. Again, it's a little foggy in my mind here, but they had a bunch of punts blocked. And I was told they weren't working on punt like protection in practice. So when you're not addressing the weaknesses of your program, there was just sort of an accountability issue for Jeff Collins. Now, Jeff Collins has always been a good recruiter. He came from the Saban system. There was a good development plan in place. There was clearly a talented roster because they went 500, running out the string. So I really think that maximizing the roster you have is, one of the tenets of being a great coach, right? Like you can't you're not going to win the national title at East Carolina. But if you can make East Carolina the best version of that team, you've done a good job as a coach. And so Brent Key pulled them sort of out of the fog of malaise that they'd been in under Collins. And I mean, shoot, he went 4-4. Collins only won 10 games in 4 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just, that was just a match that did not work out. And you wonder how much of Collins, who had a great reputation as a defensive coordinator at Mississippi State when he was there when, you know, they were on that Dak Prescott run. He had a great reputation as a defensive coordinator at Florida. And, you know, there was a lot of good there, but I think his Temple success was fed off of Matt Rhule a little bit because he inherited a really good team, really good roster from Matt Rhule.
Okay, so Auburn, Nebraska, now Wisconsin, a lot of those things have taken up a lot of your time. What's the one thing that's keeping Pete Thamel's phone alive right now?
Is Deion Sanders going to Colorado, or where is Deion Sanders going? People are fascinated with Deion Sanders. And quite frankly, if Deion Sanders does end up at one of these jobs, could be South Florida. It almost seemed like they dropped the Colorado offer there to just sort of see, you know, see if anyone else wanted to step in. You know, could you imagine Deion Sanders at UNLV, Reese?
Wow. That would certainly elevate the profile of the Running Rebels. I mean, wouldn't have so much national attention since Jerry Tarkanian left the basketball sideline.
Yeah, I mean, they'd get the next generation of Randall Cunninghams in football, which was the last time, you know, they were really ripping there. So I don't know if Marcus Arroyo got the fairest shake there in his 3 years there. And, you know, starts COVID, they go winless. Yeah. And he built it to 5-7, which at UNLV, 5-7 is hard to do. Now, I think they were 4-1 to start the year and went on a slide late. They could still make a bowl, actually, because they have good APR. But it's a new AD.
New AD
over for Desiree Reed, Francois, Eric Harper. And look, there are so many now quick turn success stories that everyone thinks it can happen there. Oh, we're going to portal it up. And, you know, Jim Mora is going to win 6 games. Oh, we're going to portal it up. And in 2 years, we'll bring in Hendon Hooker and we'll kick Alabama's tail up and down the field in old General Neyland Stadium. You look at Washington gets an injection from the portal with Michael Penix. You look at Oregon gets an injection from the portal with Bo Nix. You look at USC. They are the portal success story of maybe of all time. They're knocking on the door of the playoff with Caleb Williams, Jordan Addison, Mario Williams, Shane Lee from Alabama. I mean, they are team portal. Lincoln said it going into the year. It's going to be one of the, you know, most unique rosters in the history of USC. And both of us were skeptics that they could be here knocking on the door, but oh boy,
yeah, they're there. I wondered what would happen when adversity hit. And in all honesty, I know they lost a game, but it never really hit. And you know, and that's to their credit. They were challenged several times by adversity. I sort of meant like losing on something other than a late 2-point conversion in a hostile environment on the road, like, you know, dumping one you shouldn't. And then a couple of your stars didn't get the touches they wanted or whatever. And that never happened, but that's to their credit. And that's to Lincoln's credit for pulling them together. I want to go back to Deion for just a second.
Oh,
Deion is one of the most fascinating coaching candidates around because he can say whatever he wants to, because he's Deion Sanders. He doesn't have to play the game. When he first, or his camp, however it got out that he had been offered contact, whatever the semantics were about the Colorado thing, my knee-jerk reaction was, well, if I were Colorado and I did offer him, I would rescind it right now. Just because if you're not going to keep that circumspect and keep that to yourself, then that shows two things to me, is that maybe, you know, you're not serious about my job, number one. And number two, it would signal to me that you getting the offer is more important than what you're going to do with the job. But then I started thinking about it a little more, and I thought, you know what? This is refreshing, because instead of playing the game, Deion just told the truth, which was kind of great, you know? Yeah. And I thought, you know what? So what? If he says he got the offer and he eventually decides to take the Colorado job, it's not really going to impact whether he does a good job. So, I mean, at first, I think because you just don't hear it, I was like, I'd rescind that offer if he can't keep it to himself. And then I studied on it more and I thought, no, why not? Good for him. He's Deion Sanders. He's earned that. He can do what he wants.
Yeah. Well, Joel Klatt of Fox has been part of the Colorado search. Like, people who interviewed for the job at Colorado have talked X's and O's with Joel. I think Gary Barnett, too, who's their who's their radio guy. So there are some sort of natural interwoven media pieces to this Colorado job. But it is just I mean, that job opened the weekend we were in Boone, I believe, because I went to Nashville from, if it wasn't the weekend we were in Boone, it was one of the weekends we were in Clemson, maybe the weekend we were in Clemson. Mm-hmm. So that job opened a long time ago and they've had a bunch of chances to fill it. And so it'll be really interesting to see if it does end up being Deion. And then, you know, how he handles all the responsibilities. He's never been in an FBS school. He's never, you know, been in Power Five school. How do you manage the board? How do you manage the roster? How do you manage the portal? It will be a really interesting administrative challenge for Rick George to kind of get Deion up and get him running there in Boulder, which is a place where there's not really a big natural recruiting base. It's a complicated place to win. And Deion Sanders has shown he can win at Jackson State. There's no doubt about that. He has got a talented roster, playing really well. His son's a quarterback, Shador. And look, when we were there, they looked every bit, you know, if you had told me that was Southern Miss, nobody would have blinked, right?
Yep.
Like, I mean, they looked every bit the part on the hoof when we were there. And it'd be interesting to see how Deion handles some adversity, because their roster is really bare bones right now at Colorado. And they'll certainly have a portal infusion. There's no doubt about that. But this isn't going to be USC where they're knocking on the door of the playoff next year. So Deion, there have been moments where he has not handled adversity well. So it would be interesting to see your 3-6 and just the stuff that happens as the season goes. And again, the Colorado football program isn't exactly covered like the Alabama football program, but there's going to be scrutiny. There's going to be more accountability. Mm-hmm. You can't yell at a reporter because he calls you by your first name. Like, you know, some of the Deion, celebratory Deion stuff might get a little old, right? Like, can you run a program that you are the primary heartbeat and energy of, and everything revolves around you at that level? I don't know. I think, I would
isn't
love
that
to
what
see it
isn't
happen.
That what all college coaches
they
do
are
at the
they
end
are,
of the but, day? I mean, they really do. They may do it with a different type of personality, but I mean, every college coach is about that.
Yes. No. I mean, look, we are in the cult of coach, and it's worse in basketball than in football in some ways.
Yeah.
But yes, the cult of coach is very much alive. Just look at their salaries and you know, look at their, you know, the graphics on the walls and their camps and everything like that. But Deion's going to take that cult to a whole new level. And there will be people who think he's going to, I've talked to people who think he's going to go win a national title. And I talked to people who think he's going to be an abject, miserable failure. And I talked to ADs who'd hire him a second. And I talked to ADs that wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. So there's just, it is, it, the reason it is so interesting, Reese, is that it is so divisive, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you go hire Jamie Chadwell at one of these open jobs, just to use like your hot mid-major coach of the moment, right? Like, Jamie Chadwell's probably going to win, you know, and you talk to 10 people that say, yeah, he does a good job. He runs a good offense. You know, he's an innovative guy, won at lower levels. We'll see. You talk to people who think Deion could run the place into the ground, and you talk to people who think they could bring him back to the Eric Bieniemy glory days. And so, like, let's go. Let's let it rip. This is, we say it all the time on here, this is a billion-dollar entertainment business. And there will be no place that could offer more potential entertainment than Boulder next year if Deion's there.
You're laying odds. You think that's where he winds up?
I do. Or, just because it's been so public and nobody's backed off it.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be fascinating. That could bring game day back to Boulder for the first time in a really long time. If Deion Sanders is head coach there.
Yeah, you'd have to box Fowler out. He'd try to Wally Pipp you for that one.
Is Fowler in the on the search committee too?
Fowler's not on the search committee. They did not respect his X's and O's acumen enough. So tell him he needs to donate more money, Chris, if you're listening.
That's what it is. they're just going to they're going to squeeze Fowler for some more coin before they put him on those boards like that.
You let Klatt give more than you, Chris? Come on.
Well, I don't know. Okay. I'm not. That's all I'll say about that. I better not. I don't want to give Joel any more publicity than we already have. No, Joel's a good dude. We're on a board together with the National Football Foundation. I enjoy his company. He's a good guy.
He's a very good analyst too.
Yeah,
he's an excellent analyst. He's well prepared. He's dialed in.
He'll help.
Sometimes I'll be at walkthroughs or practices Thursdays and Fridays. I'm a fan.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's a good
even if he does work for the enemy. So,
does he have a job on TV?
I knew when he was a Boulder, like a Colorado radio show host.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought he was doing these days. Anyway, I kid, guys. We're just joking. It's a joke. Everybody's so sensitive these days, you know, just a joke. All right, Pete, I guess we make predictions for the last time on Friday. You, me, and Bill, race for the ribeye. We'll wrap it up with all of these conference championship games. Small spreads too for a bunch of them.
Oh yeah, so, let's go. Let's go. I'm excited, man. I'm excited. It's been a fun season, man. And
it's been awesome. It's been great.
I'm ready to get down to Jerry World. Go to the Walmart next door and have a little see how much purple pours in.
Where are you wearing a purple tie?
I guess you can, right?
You can go purple. Everybody's purple this week.
My outfits may or may not have already been picked out for me because my wife's going away here. And so I'm looking over. I have there's a red tie and a blue tie, my Friday and Saturday.
Oh, there you go. Neutral.
Well, perhaps we change. I have some nice purple ties.
Yeah. I may go purple. I don't know. We'll see. All right, my man. I know that your computer blew up this week at the least opportune time. I hope that your phone doesn't for the next few days while you take care of the last remnants of these coaching searches and transfer portals and the like.
Yeah, we're just getting going. So it's a marathon, not a sprint. So, but it's been fun. It's been an interesting carousel, some great hires. And then I think there's still like 12 open jobs. So the phone will be a buzzing, Reese.
Yeah, it always is. All right, we'll be back on Friday. Pete, Bill, and I will finish with a bang going in the race for the ribeye. We guarantee that all picks will be correct, maybe, when we pick them on Friday. Thanks for listening to the College Game Day podcast. We invite you to download this wherever it is you prefer to get your podcast. We'll see you on Friday.